frantically on one foot, she wrenched the other shoe off and ran into the night. The prince walked slowly to the top of the steps and picked up the discarded slipper. He held it. The light glittered off its facets. Granny Weatherwax leaned against the wall in the shadows. All stories had a turning point, and it had to be close. She was good at getting into other people's minds, but now she had to get into hers. She concentrated. Down deeper, past everyday thoughts and minor concerns, faster, faster, through layers of deep cogitation, deeper, past things sealed off and crusted over, old guilts and congealed regrets. But there was no time for them now. Down, and there, the silver thread of the story. She'd been part of it, was part of it, so it had to be a part of her. It poured past. She reached out. She hated everything that predestined people, that fooled them, that made them slightly less than human. The story whipped along like a steel hawser. She gripped it. Her eyes opened in shock. Then she stepped forward.
"Excuse me, Your Highness." She snatched the shoe from the Duke's hands and raised it over her head. Her expression of evil satisfaction was terrible to behold. Then she dropped the shoe. It smashed on the stairs. A thousand glittering fragments scattered across the marble.
Coiled as it was around the length of turtle-shaped space-time known as the Discworld, the story shook. One broken end flapped loose and flailed through the night, trying to find any sequence to feed on. In the clearing, the trees moved. So did the shadows. Shadows shouldn't be able to move unless the light moves. These did. The drumming stopped. In the silence, there was the occasional sizzle as power cracked across the hanging coat. Saturday stepped forward. Green sparks flew out to his hands as he gripped the jacket and put it on. His body jerked. Erzulia Goggle breathed out.
"You are here," she said. "You are still yourself. You are exactly yourself."
Saturday raised his hands with his fists clenched. Occasionally an arm or leg would jerk as the power inside him squirrel-caged around in its search for freedom. But she could see that he was riding it.
"It will become easier," she said, more gently now.
Saturday nodded. With the power flowing inside him, he had, she thought, the fire he'd had when he was alive. He had not been a particularly good man, she knew. Genua had not been a model of civic virtue, but at least he'd never told people that they wanted him to oppress them, and that everything he did was for their own good. Around the circle, the people of New Genua, the old New Genua, knelt or bowed. He hadn't been a kind ruler, but he'd fitted. And when he'd been arbitrary or arrogant or just plain wrong, he'd never suggested that this was justified by anything other than the fact that he was bigger and stronger and occasionally nastier than other people. He'd never suggested that it was because he was better. And he'd never told people they ought to be happy and imposed a kind of happiness on them. The invisible people knew that happiness is not the natural state of mankind and is never achieved from the outside in. Saturday nodded again, this time in satisfaction. When he opened his mouth, sparks flashed between his teeth, and when he waded through the swamp, the alligators fought to get out of his way. It was quiet in the palace kitchens now. The huge trays of roast meat, the pigs' heads with apples in their mouths, the multi-layered trifles had long ago been carried upstairs. There was a clattering from the giant sinks at the far end, where some of the maids were making a start on the washing up. Mrs. Pleasant, the cook, had made herself a plate of red stripe fish in crawfish sauce. She wasn't the finest cook in Genua. No one got near Mrs. Goggle's gumbo. People would almost come back from the dead for a taste of Mrs. Goggle's gumbo. But the comparison was as narrow as that between, say, diamonds and sapphires. She'd done her best to cook up a good banquet because she had her professional pride, but there wasn't much she felt she was able to do with lumps of meat. Genuine cooking, like the best cooking everywhere in the multiverse, had been evolved by people who had to make desperate use of ingredients their masters didn't want. No one would even try a bird's nest unless they had to. Only hunger would make a man taste his first alligator. No one would eat a shark's fin if they were allowed to eat the rest of the shark. She poured herself a rum and was just picking up the spoon when she felt herself being watched. A large man in a black leather doublet was staring at her from the doorway, dangling a ginger cat mask from one hand. It was a very direct stare. Mrs. Pleasant found herself wishing she'd done something about her hair and was wearing a better dress.